Broadcasting to New York City, Los Angeles, Chicago, Sydney, London, and around the world, this is Trumpet Radio Live.
Welcome to Trumpet Radio Live, the Wednesday edition. A lot to talk about today. Of course, major earthquake. Some more details on that. Americans being told to get out of Gaza while you can. The war on recess. We'll talk about that. College you're starting up, and a lot of trouble too. And some good news for your brain. All this coming up on this edition of Trumpet Radio Live.
Trumpet Radio Live.
Thanks for joining us here on Trumpet Radio 101.3 KPCG. We're online at kpcg.fm, too. Live link there at thetrumpet.com. And the TuneIn app also is a great place to listen when you're on the go. This is Trumpet Radio Live. I'm Dwight Falk, Grant Turgeon here today. Lots happening today, Grant. Lots going on in the news.
Yeah, and big news about last night. I tried the Whopperito.
Oh, you did?
Yes.
How did that go?
Well, I mean, it was such an exquisite experience. It's hard to really even describe it. A good blend between American fast food and Tex-Mex, I guess, has a charbroiled, spicy type of flavor to it. Basically like a burger wrapped up in a tortilla.
So exactly, kind of what you'd expect.
Exactly what I was expecting.
You're feeling good. You're looking good.
Yes. It's just a pleasant experience overall.
Probably not an everyday occurrence.
And really, it can't beat the chicken fries they have there at Burger King.
Well, there you go. This was a surprise to me. Even.
I didn't even tell you before we came on.
No, I didn't even know that you had the Whopperito. So that's a new dish, I guess, if you call it that, entree.
You could even say it's less fattening without the huge bun. So
that's true.
People looking for a diet, maybe they can get it at Burger King.
The Whopperito diet. So best of luck. 30 days later, we'll see what happens with that. Well, good. Well, I'm glad you're doing all right today. It's always nice to be surprised on the air with updates like that. Lots of headlines to talk about today. Of course, the Key of David program, Trumpet Daily Radio Show, we'll preview those. Some really interesting stories about going back to college, some of the things that are happening in the universities that are pretty alarming in a lot of ways, and a few other topics to get to as well. Of course, the big story today, I guess, would be besides the Whopperito that you ate last night. But on the much more serious side, there was, of course, that big earthquake over there in central Italy. And it was a magnitude 6.2 earthquake. It struck central Italy early Wednesday. Reports of fatalities and significant damage surfacing quickly in the aftermath. The number of dead keeps going up. Last time I looked, it was set 73 people. And, of course, as they go through all of that rubble, they're going to find more, I would think. And it takes a while to get through that. If you've seen the pictures, I mean, those towns have been flattened.
I looked less than an hour ago, and it said only 54. So really, the number count is skyrocketing. Not too surprising whenever you have flattened towns and people just trying to pull back all these rocks and find new people.
Yeah, there was the tremors were felt as far away as the capital city of Rome, which is 100 miles away, a little more than 100 miles from the quake's epicenter. In the town of Amatrice, the damage was so extensive that its mayor told the Associated Press the town isn't here anymore. So it just makes you stop and think about how quickly life can just disappear. I mean, no one knows or expects these things to happen. You're going about your business and all of a sudden, for those people, their town is gone, just like that.
Yeah, no control over these issues either. We talked about flooding and droughts recently, and just... depends on where you are, I guess, but different issues hit different areas of the world. It kind of makes me wonder if they were on top of a major fault line.
Yeah, really interesting situation over there. So that's, of course, we'll see what the death toll ends up being as they go through and they get out the different equipment to try to remove some of that debris. So pretty serious situation over there in central Italy. Here's a headline from Newsweek today. U.S. calls on Americans to leave Gaza, quote, as soon as possible. That's never a good sign. Well, I wouldn't want to be in Gaza anyway. They say the United States on Tuesday called on Americans in the Gaza Strip to leave the coastal enclave as soon as possible. The U.S. State Department said that Americans in Gaza should enter into Israeli or Egyptian territory when they could do that because of security threats to the citizens. It warned Americans against all travel to Gaza and urges those present to depart as soon as possible when border crossings open. And the statement continued, Gaza is under the control of Hamas, a foreign terrorist organization. Well, yeah, of course. Who's behind Hamas? Just powers we deal with constantly. The security environment within Gaza, they say, and on its borders is dangerous and volatile. So the warning comes after the latest flare-up between Palestinian militants and the Israeli military over the weekend, and so they're giving a warning to Americans to get out of there.
Just more evidence of the brilliance of the two-state solution, I guess, just to split Israel up between the Jews and their mortal enemies.
Well, and it's always interesting, too, because as much as there really is, particularly from this administration, a very anti-Israel bias and a very pro-Iran bias and pro these other nations, when there's a travel advisory or a warning, they don't say, hey, get to Iran as quickly as you can.
I thought they were our best friends now.
Well, wouldn't you think so? Well, shouldn't you get over there?
Shouldn't they be
taken hostage?
So hospitable toward our citizens?
Well, you know, it's just so funny. They know where to go. Yeah, go to Israel because you'll be safe.
Yeah.
Why? Because they're a friendly nation to us.
Even after how much our nation has disrespected them, too. I mean, the Palestinians are led by a terrorist group right now, and we still try to negotiate peace over there.
Well, yeah, it's just crazy. And they know that Israel will follow the rule of law. You don't have to worry about being taken hostage and ransomed. So it really highlights kind of this weird double thinking that's going on, where they're being friendly to these nations that clearly are our enemies, and then as soon as there's trouble, though, then, you know, hey, get into Israel because they're our friends. But it's the opposite of what we're promoting as the administration anyway.
Yeah, if they're acknowledging the danger, they should also be able to acknowledge that those same nations who pose the threat are not friends. They're able to do one but not the other, and that's just really confusing.
Yeah, so hopefully people get out of there if they can. Here's a interesting headline from Fox News, Parents versus Schools, the War on Recess. This is something that's been in the news over the last few years. There's sort of this, there's been this thinking that in order to improve the test scores of U.S. students, they should have less recess. Now, I liked recess. If you ask most young kids, what's your favorite subject? It's probably going to be lunch, gym class, or recess.
Right.
And then there might be something else in there, too. But they're fun. They're fun. So as kids head back to school this year, they say some parents are celebrating a victory in the battle to improve their children's education. It isn't better textbooks or an improved curriculum or even better teachers. It's more recess. Which is good. In Miami-Dade, Florida, parents fought for 20 minutes a day of free play and got the school district to guarantee 15 minutes a day of recess. We used to have an hour at lunch, and then we had a 15-minute one in the morning and a 15-minute one in the afternoon, and gym class.
Right.
When I was in grade school.
Yeah, a couple hours, if not more, of physical activity, at least if you chose to use recess that way. So I don't know why, sitting in class all day would actually help you. It doesn't give your brain a rest.
Well, there are plenty of reports that show that if you exercise more, you can think better.
Mm-hmm.
You need to get some of that energy. I mean, we even know that as adults, if you have a job where you're sitting, you got to get up and get it moving. They're even telling you for your own health, get up and move around because sitting all day is a bad thing. But they're jamming the kids into the seats there all day. And, So they've gotten a little more recess here. I don't think it's enough. They've gotten a little bit more. They had pulled it back to where they weren't getting much recess at all. And you know what happened to their test scores? Nothing. It was the same.
Mm-hmm.
They said there was no improvement.
And add on top of that the fact that kids probably feel a little bit more sluggish after not getting any physical movement at all.
Besides just the academics, one of the other things that sometimes people were against recess for was because of the threat of bullying. And you know what? It's going to happen.
Yeah.
And that's a life lesson.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody likes it. But, I mean, now, in some cases, I suppose it could be dangerous in some schools. But it wasn't the case, really, when I went to school. It was, yeah, you'd have your days. Hey, this wasn't a great day today. I got bullied today. You just keep moving. And you learn some things, and you move on. Ideally, that would never happen. But what are you going to do? You know, you can't put yourself in a tiny little, you know, box for the rest of your life, and no one ever bother me in any way. You have to learn how to deal with life and different people. And you learn a lot on the playground.
Yeah, there's always teachers and parents out there monitoring the kids anyway. And if you're a smart kid and you don't want to get bullied, stay near the monitors. I don't think much is going to happen to you. I got bullied during recess, and I dealt with bullying during recess, but it never scarred me long term.
It's something people, I think, do go through. And again, it's not like it's great. We don't love that sort of thing. But... yeah, you kind of have to go through some things in life sometimes. So recess is great. If I looked at all my recess memories, most of them are positive. One or two moments that probably weren't great. But just getting out there, getting fresh air, running around was really vital to us. And, you know, I tell you, too, if we had – because we'd always have written on the board when we came in, like, our schedule for the day. You know, we're going to do this. And so when you could look down the schedule and see – oh, we have gym class today, and we have this and recess. Those are the things you're really excited about. So if right before gym class you had math, it, for me anyway, it was like, I'm going to get through my math. I want to make sure I get it done, because one of the threats was if you don't finish your assignments, you don't go out for recess.
Right.
I guarantee you we got on it because we wanted to get out there.
Yes, yeah, so all of a sudden the kids have a way higher capability to get work done than you would have ever thought possible. Yeah, I think... recess is a really good thing. It's amazing that people try to get rid of it. It's just so good for your mental abilities just to get that break. And it's also an exciting part of the day. It breaks up the day nicely.
Yeah, I was always enjoyed it. I always thought we should have adult recess too at work.
Yeah.
Break up the day. Some people kind of do that.
Yeah.
They'll go to the Y or something with a group and play sports. And so I think it's a good thing. Here's this disturbing headline from the Washington Post with college starting up again. It says, this is headline, "So you're a Jew and you're starting college. Prepare for anti-Zionism." This is written by, I believe, a Jewish student. "Congratulations," they say, "new college freshman, welcome to what will undoubtedly be some of the most exciting years of your life. Get ready to meet new people, learn things that fascinate you, and figure out who you are and who you want to be. If you're Jewish, you should probably also prepare yourself for the various forms of anti-Israel sentiment and maybe even anti-Semitism you're likely to encounter on your new college campus. In the past year alone, as a Jewish student at McGill University in Montreal, I've been called," and then they have a few names that we won't repeat, but definitely anti-Semitic. "I've been told several times that Jews haven't suffered." She says, or they say, "Never mind the Spanish Inquisition, Eastern European pogroms, and centuries of violence and marginalization leading up to the Holocaust. I've seen my friends mocked for their Judaism in crude, hateful language on popular anonymous social media platforms. When I asked if a student publication would write about instances of anti-Semitism on campus, in its end-of-year issue, I was told that those instances were already covered in, quote, mainstream Zionist media."
Zionist media, huh?
Yeah. So pretty startling. For all the hypersensitivity to any form of hate speech, or what we called hate speech, or persecution of any kind, the fact that they allow this to go on in college and sometimes promote it is unbelievable.
This fits in right with a headline I saw that said the State University of New York is actually having a class where they're teaching diversity, but they call it Stop White People 2016. They say it's a diversity class, but they also want to teach people to check their privilege and show that white people should not dominate. But I guess it seems like if you're white or Jewish or a man, a lot of the time those are the areas where you're most persecuted, contrary to popular opinion.
It's amazing. It does really tie into the Trump Daily Radio Show just a day or two ago on talking about the times of the Gentiles, and that's what you see happening here. Mm-hmm. Just the ignorance to say that Jews haven't suffered. I mean, yeah. That's just an embarrassment.
Well, that just shows you people might not even know any history to say that. I mean, they're probably the most persecuted type of people of all time.
Probably, yeah. We know it. I mean, we've seen it in our recent history. It's all over. You can see, you know, the Holocaust and all of those things that happened. There's museums about it.
Yeah.
I mean, go
to a museum and say if they still haven't suffered.
Yeah, unbelievable. And granted, every group has in some way at some point, but this group in particular. So there's videos even out. You can see them on the internet, various places where there will be support at college campuses for pro-Hamas rallies. But if there's a pro-Israel rally, they usually get shouted down. And by the way, you know, like we just talked about, hey, if you're in Gaza, get out of there and go to Israel.
What is the popularity with supporting terrorists over regular people who are getting attacked all the time, by the way?
Yeah, it doesn't make sense if you just stop and think about it just on a, you know, basic level. But of course, there's a lot more that goes on behind the scenes oftentimes, and that's written about at thetrumpet.com. A lot of good books about just some of the events that we're seeing here, so you can go through the library and find your desired topic and read a lot about these different things that are going on. So anyway, not good news for Jewish people going to college here in the U.S. Of course, this is from Canada, the write-up, but obviously the U.S. is the same. Here's some news that is kind of sad, but there might be something good in it too. You know, of course, NFL players have been getting concussions and causing a lot of brain problems. This is Ben Utek. And he played in the NFL. I think he was a tight end. But he says, I left with some long-term memory issues. He had 5 concussions in his career that he knows about, pretty severe ones. And so he's written a book kind of about it and talking about things. And he's not anti-football necessarily. He wants to kind of work to figure out a better way to avoid these problems. But what's interesting about this, besides just the topic of concussions, is that he's working with this group that is trying to help people's brains function better. UTEC worked with Learning RX, a brain training program that improves cognitive skills. It cannot help you recall lost information, but it can help you retain information going forward. So they're learning more about the way the brain works, and what they're kind of figuring out is that, well, if you've lost something, we probably can't do much about that, but we can help you going forward. And I think it's really interesting because we all would like to improve the way our brains function, and we could all do some of these things they're talking about. You know, especially if you have never had concussions, think about how much better you can make your brain, you know, using some of these techniques.
Yeah, and I think one way is to avoid playing a sport that is the equivalent of getting in multiple car wrecks every game.
True.
That is, I mean, I think actually if you got rid of the padding and the helmet, you would actually solve a lot of the football injury problems. Because if you look at rugby, they don't have all the padding, but they also don't have the violent collisions. Guys tackle each other, but they more drag each other down instead of full-on launching themselves.
Right.
But, I mean, I guess that's not the main point of this. It is nice that he has taken his experience and really tried to improve the brain's functions, or at least how we understand them.
Yeah, he says here about the way that they are understanding the brain is that the way the neurologist described it to me is the brain is filled with neuropathways, cities, in other words, some way for us to understand it, I guess. And there are multiple ways to get to whatever city you want to go to. A highway. And when one of those ways gets broken, you're going to see a detour sign. It's a path that's not really typically been used, but then you're going to start to use that until it becomes a highway. So you're taking a new road to get to the city, and eventually it becomes a highway. Now that creates new pathways for you to store information going forward. It doesn't mean you're going to be able to retrieve what's already been lost, but you can strengthen and groove out new pathways to store and recall memory. And so he doesn't go into necessarily how they did it all, but if you just think about reading, using your brain, no matter what state you are in or what age you are at, you can improve your brain function.
We should all be encouraged to try to do that too. The brain is really a supercomputer, and we have no idea the capacity that it really does hold. It's often estimated that we only use about 10%, and that's if we're really working hard. But there are any time we think we've tired out and we can't memorize something else or we can't read another book, it's always possible.
Well, there's examples in history I think are pretty well known of people that would memorize almost whole books word for word. People could memorize the Bible. And it's not like they were just super, you know, humans, but they just really focused on it. They weren't distracted by a lot of other things. It just shows you what you can do with your mind. Even this football player, former football player Ben Utek, he says that my ability now to store short and long-term memory has improved after doing some of these different exercises. He says, my family has seen it. You can hear it in the way I'm talking. It was almost like over the course of those 100 hours that he put in to like improve his brain function, he said, I was lifted out of a fog. And so there's hope there for some people, and really for all of us, that you can just enhance your mental abilities by using that muscle, I guess you'd call it.
And you can see it takes a time investment because he did spend 100 hours on those different exercises. We can't just think that maybe reading a couple minutes a day is going to do the trick. There are a lot of things that we have to really invest time in to improve the brain's functions.
So pretty interesting little write-up there. And again, I think it's kind of specialized what they were doing with him. They didn't get into all the details. But it shows you that if you put some effort into reading and doing other things with your mind, it can really work better. And who doesn't want that?
So, that's for sure.
It might be one or two out there. Too smart, can't get any smarter, but it's best to use it or lose it, like they say. Mm-hmm. Here's our favorite segment. Of course, this is happening. This is something that's going on that is surprising, but I guess it shouldn't surprise us. Shakespeare, we have a program, Just the Best Literature, on this station, hosted by Dennis Leap, that he goes through literature, and he's been talking about Shakespeare, who, of course, is one of the most famous, maybe the most famous writer of all time. There is some controversy about the way Shakespeare is being presented. Is it the, you know, the true to the original idea? Sometimes they change it up. They try to make it more modern. Well, they're taking it a step further here in New York City. They're going to perform The Tempest completely naked in a public park.
I heard that a lot of parents are outraged by this already.
Yes. It's a public display of one of Shakespeare's classics. They're offering, they say, a very revealing performance.
But wise choice of words there. That's witty.
But not about shock value, they say. It's an all-female cast, and they're going to be nude. Come showtime next month inside Prospect Park in Brooklyn. The group also performed earlier this year in Central Park. So I don't really know why they're doing this other than to try to draw more people. They claim they're just doing it because they want it to be seen as normal and just to pay attention to the words and never mind the naked people saying them.
No one there is going to learn a single thing about The Tempest. You can't learn when people are that distracting.
Yeah. They say, we were really interested in getting an audience to be able to see nudity in a non-threatening and eventually way, and so seeing it so it wouldn't even be strange anymore. By the end of the play, it's normal, and they want to send a message of body positivity. So that's what's happening in New York City. You might be thinking to yourself, is this illegal? No. The performance breaks no laws. Nudity is allowed in New York City when it's considered part of an artistic performance.
I knew there was a loophole somewhere, especially in a bigger city like that. That's not too surprising, I guess. But come on.
Well, the thing is, obviously it's a problem, but what's an artistic performance, you know? I mean, you can bend that a lot of different ways. So they had this big performance a while ago, and they only got a few hundred people, so they still didn't get that many. I think if they're gonna do it, they might as well do it in January. At least make it really go for it, you know, when it's about 10 below zero outside.
Yeah, really make a statement. I wonder if that has much to do with they had that whole crazy Free the Nipple campaign where they're acting like men and women being topless, there's nothing different. It's like making the genders exactly the same.
Yeah, it's very bizarre. So, of course, that's happening in New York, and I'm not going to give you any more info on it because it's not relevant. I don't think anyone's going to want to go see it, but it's happening in a few months, I guess.
It's actually surprising they don't sell out, knowing most people. You'd think that people would be intrigued by that.
I don't know. Yeah, really bizarre. Really bizarre.
I don't have any interest.
It's probably
in it.
Because there's weirder things even than that happening.
Yeah, so for sure.
Drawing people in different directions. So anyway, I don't think Shakespeare envisioned that when he was writing The Tempest, but that's the way they're trying to perform that.
He would be disgusted.
I think he definitely would. Key of David program's coming up here in a bit on KPCG. One of the programs today is on Prophecy is Dual, and that's a biblical principle. Prophecy had a lot of times had a fulfillment at one time, and then it has a later fulfillment as well. It's really important to understand that if you understand Bible prophecy. So make sure you listen to this program on the Key of David, and it's coming up here in just a bit on KPCG. The title, Prophecy is Dual. Also, the Trumpet Daily Radio Show with your host, Stephen Fleury from Edstone, England. He talked today about this topic that's just keeps coming up in the news, the U.S.-Iran hostage swap debacle, if you want to call it that. Of course, U.S. paid ransom and gave Iran 7 of their criminals, and they were criminals, to get a lower number of our own people back who were not criminals. They were taken illegally. President Obama came out on the day of this swap and said it was a good day. But, of course, it was a good day for Iran, not for us.
That's probably what he meant. Yeah. Iran benefited greatly from that deal and also from pretty much every interaction they've had with America for the past 8 years. It just when will we realize that they will not change anything based on what we give them?
Yeah, really. And more details keep coming out about this. And it's interesting because a lot of the details they tried to cover them up. But now that they're coming out, they're saying, well, it's no big deal. We're not trying to cover up anything. Well, sure. Politico has a write-up today trying to quell this conversation,
Politico.
I guess. They say, this. The title says, side deals like the $400 million for Iran are just part of diplomacy. Don't worry about it. It's, you know, even though they said it wasn't ransom, then they admitted that it was, sort of. They said, don't worry, this always goes on. No big deal.
On the Trumpet Daily Radio Show this morning, Mr. Stephen Fleury actually compared it to the mafia because they're using different currencies
right.
to get around U.S. law of not performing a transaction with Iran in U.S. dollars.
Politico, at the end of their piece, they take this little shot at everybody. They say, although it may be too much to ask, sarcasm, it would be helpful for our foreign policy discourse going forward if our most excitable members of the political and media class would widen their historical aperture.
I think it's too much to ask.
It might be too much to ask.
I don't think a better grasp of history is going to make us realize that this was okay.
Yeah, it's a weird argument to say that something has happened before, therefore it's okay. Well, a lot of things have happened before. Does that make them okay? We don't need to get into them, but you can think of great disasters in history. They've happened. World wars have happened before. Does that make it something that's okay and we want to do again?
You don't want to get into a logical discussion with a liberal-minded person. There's not a whole lot of logic going on there.
But it's interesting when the media comes out, Politico and some of these, and they try to make this big argument, hey, it's no big deal. That's your first indication that it is a big deal. And the propaganda machine is in high gear.
Yeah, it's amazing how many of these media sources don't think it's a big deal. I wonder why that could be.
Yeah, it's almost like somebody told them to say that. I don't know. Interesting. So those are some of the programs that are coming up here on KPCG. Make sure you listen for those. You can find them online at kpcg.fm as well. We're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, talk about a really interesting book that college freshmen are being asked to read. We'll talk about that right after this on Trumpet Radio Live.
We'll be right back to Trumpet Radio Live.
Hello, I'm Ryan Malone, host of Music for Life. And in our next episode, we will be exploring one of the most famous lyrics of all time, a Hebrew word that has been used throughout millennia and throughout all sorts of different languages and religious denominations. In our Sounds of Scripture segment, we will explore the origins of this word and how it has survived as the phrase of choice in sacred songs of praise. And in our Classroom Corner segment, we're going to see the power of praise in the music classroom and what kind of praise specifically fosters more growth in the music student. So join me for an absolutely uplifting and exuberant episode of Music for Life, simply titled Hallelujah.
Join Ryan Malone on Music for Life this Monday at 4 p.m. Central on 101.3 KPCG and online at kpcg.fm.
Thanks for joining us on Trumpet Radio Live, 101.3 KPCG, and we're online at kpcg.fm. We have a live link, too, there at thetrumpet.com. If you'd like to follow us on Twitter, you can do that at kpcgfm, and if you'd like to email us, go ahead, comments at kpcg.fm. We're happy to take a look at those and appreciate those comments that do come in. On a lighter note, a better note, moving past.
So, we always have to get back to the lighter note.
Got to get
like.
Back to the, yeah, because everything else is so, gets so, we can get you down a little bit, but we do need to look at it because it is serious. And of course, a lot of those main stories are talked about at thetrumpet.com, the bigger ones and the bigger trends. Make sure you go there and check those out as well and get some good perspective on that. This is an interesting list. It's from listverse.com. 10 everyday activities that were once absolutely terrifying. They say history is a bubbling stew of unpleasantness. It spared no aspect of everyday life, no matter how mundane. And so it gives you 10 things here that are pretty common, but used to be more terrifying. Number 10, using the restroom. They say we've all walked into a neglected gas station bathroom and found ourselves a little bit concerned. I think that's true. But they say in ancient Rome, it was really, really difficult. It was basically a stone bench with a rough hole leading to the city's primitive sewer system. And since it was an open sewer system, there were lots of animals in there. Oof. So you're taking your chances when you had to use the facilities in Rome.
I've also read that a lot of those facilities were completely out in the open. There was no privacy whatsoever.
Correct. Correct. So not a great situation there in ancient Rome if you had to take care of that. Number 9, they say looking for work. In England in the well, of course, here in the U.S., that might be terrifying too because 1 in 3 don't work, I guess. In England in the 1500s, it was illegal to be jobless. They say the government treated you as a second-class citizen and punishments for crimes were much harsher. And if an unemployed citizen sought to better himself with gainful employment, he'd better not travel to do so, or he faced being labeled a vagrant. Mm. He was tied down, whipped, and sent back home. There you go. Different times.
It might be time to introduce some of those methods today.
People would be quicker to get a job, that's for sure.
People are, you know, lifelong welfare dependents now without even being injured or needing it.
Well, they said if you were a repeat offender, you were branded with the letter V and forced into slavery. If you didn't want to work, they just put you to work, but you wouldn't get paid for
it. V for vagrant.
Yeah.
I guess.
So more serious back then. These are things that were terrifying years ago. Number 8, dealing with bad skin. They say minor skin conditions like acne or psoriasis can certainly feel like a nightmare, but thanks to hundreds of creams and pills out there, they say, it's a manageable one. Not so for our medieval ancestors, for whom a particularly large pimple may have meant the end of life as they knew it.
Wow.
They said due to the rampant paranoia over leprosy, many with less severe skin ailments like psoriasis were often accused of carrying the dreaded illness. They received the same alienating treatment as real leprosy sufferers. They were made to wear special clothing, carry a bell to alert the healthy of their presence. And they couldn't talk to anyone above a whisper, and then some of them were burned. So you wanted to have clear skin. It was a much more serious deal back then.
Yeah, wow. And it just shows you how quarantining yourself if you're sick is probably a good idea. Or you could wear a bell and walk around wearing a bell.
Wear the sick bell. Yeah, would not want that. Number 7, going to the theater. They say unfortunate shooting incidents aside, a trip to the movie theater today is typically considered a good thing. But rewind a couple hundred years and you were almost guaranteed to die. Playhouses and music halls of the 1800s were notorious for being poorly constructed, overcrowded, and really flammable. So when fires weren't breaking out and killing people, stampedes caused by false fire alarms were. England was a hotbed of theater tragedy. Over 80 people, many children and teenagers, died in music hall disasters in just two decades. Mm. And so, because like they say, poorly constructed, overcrowded, and flammable, you could die by fire or stampede. Or you could have a good show and go home. One of those options.
Hopefully the last one. But yeah, the stampede, it's amazing what can happen when you think there's an emergency. People just do not want to suffer, and they'll get you out of the way.
That's why it's illegal to yell fire in a theater or public place.
Oh, it is?
Yeah.
That makes sense.
Because
yeah.
of those things. Because if somebody yells it and it's dark and it's crowded, people are going to get injured.
Yeah, you could indirectly
right.
kill or hurt someone by saying that.
Yeah. So a lot of times that's where most of the injuries occur, is not from the incident, but the panic that ensues. Ugh. Number six was fighting. Of course, I don't think that fighting is harmless today either, but more serious, I guess, back in the day. They say, so, okay, maybe fighting isn't an everyday activity exactly, but a minor scuffle is something most people will find themselves involved in at some point. During the Middle Ages, any minor altercation could quickly escalate to a full-on death match. They have a painting here of people fighting in, like, torches and to kind of drive the point home. The Oxford University of the 14th century was a lot less refined than its modern counterpart. For instance, in February 1355, a group of drunken students in a local tavern insulted the quality of the establishment's wine. The annoyed innkeeper told them, in so many medieval words, where they could place their complaints. This resulted in a thrown pot and, bizarrely, the town militia being summoned to arms. Not to be outdone, the university called its own people to the fight. An epic battle broke out in and around the college as enraged villagers stormed the grounds. By the end of what came to be known as the St. Scholastica's Day Riot, 62 students had been killed.
Wow. And it's all because of those couple of drunk kids complaining about the quality of wine. It seemed like they were enjoying it a little too much as it was.
That's why they say you should never whine. Maybe that's a different meaning. Anyway.
Probably a little different.
You don't want to be a whiner in that case, yeah. Number five was voting. They say today the worst you can expect to encounter while casting your vote are annoyingly long lines. Not true, I don't think. There are some things that are more serious lately. But in the 19th century, they say, however, the most diehard fans of democracy dared brave the streets on election day. Everyone else barricaded themselves indoors to avoid being cooped, as it was called. Cooping was a practice which involved street gangs in the employ of political parties kidnapping people off the street and forcing them to vote for their candidate.
What?
So that's election day was time to hide.
It almost kind of happens today with people standing outside of the polls and or the voting area and issuing threats.
Yeah, that's what I thought too. I thought, well, this is kind of not that far removed. We're not that far removed from doing that ourselves here a little bit. So that is interesting that some of those things do happen. Number four, they say, and this was this is probably not a great one for the list considering the times we're in, but dealing with police.
Mm.
They say, though an immediately nerve-wracking experience, a brush with the law today is nothing compared to a couple of centuries ago. Londoners of the 18th century had real reason to worry when a officer crossed their path because a great many of them weren't actually police. They were imposters. Whoa. Of all sorts were rampant in the London of old, and many of those chose to exploit the populace's trust in authority and could have all kinds of problems. So that happens very rarely, but sometimes people try that.
Ugh, that's risky because it's easier to be caught doing that today pretty quickly. They have a better system for that.
Yeah, that occasionally that pops up on the news where somebody tries it, and usually they're not very successful with it, thankfully, but that's something that does occur occasionally. Number three... things that were more terrifying back in the day, buying spices. Must admit, I don't know that I've ever bought a spice, but it's never concerned me.
No.
They say, all right, so you probably don't use many spices. No one does. I don't know if that's true. Some cooks do.
My wife buys them.
Yeah.
So I never have.
But they say, let's say you decide to whip up a nice meal and desperately need some nutmeg. 15 minutes and one trip to the store later, you're all set. But they say back in the Middle Ages, it was something you could be killed for. That nutmeg, for instance, was once only found in the remote Banda Islands, appropriately nicknamed the Spice Islands. Over the course of a few centuries, the Spice Wars ravaged the native population as various European powers sought control over this motherlode. Over 6,000 people lost their lives for the powder gathering dust in your kitchen cabinet. Death because of the nutmeg.
Just don't ask for the nutmeg. And it's not that crucial to kill 6,000 people.
Yeah, it was a big thing back then. A lot of trade revolved around that. Number two, going to the hospital. Of course, that could be scary today too, I guess. American hospitals of the 1800s were almost certainly worse than whatever landed patients there in the first place. They say left in filthy rooms, they often were riddled with parasites, and they were poorly fed and regularly forgotten about. So some of those situations were bad, and if you were sick and you went there, you were probably going to end up dead because of not the illness, but the hospital.
That sounds like some of the conditions we hear about in war when there's a lot of casualties. It's hard for the nurses on the battlefield to deal with it all, but I guess maybe it was like that even when there wasn't a war going on.
Yeah, could be a bad situation. Still happens today sometimes, but not, of course, to that level. And the number one thing that we do pretty commonly today, but back in the day it could have killed you, is taking a stroll around town. I guess it depends on what town you're strolling around, but they say, yes, apparently our battered forebears couldn't even take a leisurely stroll to escape the pit of unending madness that was daily life, because at some point, when they least expected it, they were probably going to run face first into a hairy, naked person. They say public nudity was all the rage during the 17th and 18th centuries. Somewhat ironically, most followers of this liberal new trend were more of the religious variety.
Oh.
So kind of interesting. It says, streaking was also a favorite pastime of rebellious London citizens of the 1600s. This went hand in hand with an emerging new attitude valuing freedom over rigid self-control. They were hippies before hippies were a thing, ensuring that no eye would be spared the horrors of them running through town. And so they would get into some scuffles apparently at times as well. So that would be a bad situation back in the day there in the 1800s. Those are some of the some of the events that we might do a little more casually today, but they were terrifying and could be deadly years ago.
So now we know there's a lot to actually be thankful for and not to complain so much.
Well, that's true too. I was when we were talking about some of these lists on the list, I thought, yeah, I mean, it's good to look at some of those things in history and think, yeah, it's a lot better today.
We have it really good.
Yeah. Really, really good compared to a lot of people over the years. You see a lot of people that lived through World War I, World War II, and had to be involved in both. You know, in modern times, and if you go back further, obviously, you know, those people were definitely not so concerned about all the little petty annoyances of life.
Yeah, yet there's more complaining today. I think we need to resurrect toughness and grit.
It's not a bad idea. Make sure you listen for the Key of David program coming your way here in just a bit on KPCG. One of the programs today is The Duality in Prophecy. Also, the Trumpet Daily Radio Show with your host, Stephen Fleury. A lot of great information there about the U.S.-Iran hostage swap and all that went on there. A lot in the news about it. Make sure you listen for this program. Gives you some really good insight into what's going on with that situation. That will do it for us on Trumpet Radio Live today. Thanks for joining us. Myself, Dwight Falk, and Grant Turgeon. Have a great rest of your day, and we'll see you back here tomorrow. You're listening to 101.3 KPCG.
Listening to Trumpet Radio 101.3 KPCG.